Thank you all so much for being here. So we'll go from digital to analog.
Each of you believes passionately in adolescence and the need to provide health care and correct information. But what's common among all of these presentations is the understanding that there may be other ways to reach young people. This is important because, as we see, money for education, money for sexuality education, and the politics of sexuality education are rather intense. I have nothing to disclose. And today, I'm going to talk about our work at the Game Changer Design Lab. You've heard amazing reports about successes, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about failure. And I think as we create interventions, that is what happens. But first of all, why games? So the game industry is about this year, we think it's going to be about $70.4 billion. That's when you take in the computers and the consoles and all of these other things. Mobile games, not quite as much, only a little over north of $1 billion. But it's a huge industry. And I think there's this great fascination. If we could get people to also pull sexuality information, pull games that give them this information, wouldn't that be a bonus? And so that is what we do. We start to think about how we can design games that can get into this other space, the sexual and reproductive health space. So I'll talk a little bit about who we are. I'm going to talk about a project that I think in many ways were hard lessons learned. And then I'm going to talk about how we responded. Okay. So the Game Changer Design Lab is an interdisciplinary lab. And these are our game designers and staff, but it's a project that I started with someone in the English and New Media Department at the University of Chicago. And our team includes game designers, people from theater, people with backgrounds in storytelling. And I always want to say thank you to both the National Campaign and Planned Parenthood. The National Campaign supported one of our earliest projects. Planned Parenthood is a great research partner for us, so it's wonderful to be presenting alongside of you. We do a lot of games that are digital media, and the idea is that digital media has really redefined the way that we lead our lives. What a great presentation on the changes in cell phone use. All of us lead our lives differently because of digital media, and the question is, can we start to be educated differently also as well because of digital media? We use two things. We use actually the process of designing games with young people, but also playing games with young people, and start to ask questions about knowledge, self-efficacy, attitudes, relationships, and can we create an environment for learning? I think this, if anyone has kids or does anything with kids, you can think about the role of a board game. You know, what do you say to a three-year-old? But if you play a game with a three-year-old, suddenly you're communicating, right? So I think throughout our lives, we use games as a safe space to begin to explore and communicate and interact with other people. And so that's sort of the idea behind Game Changer. And so we think games do a number of things. First of all, they break down barriers. We're in particular, the University of Chicago is located on the south side of Chicago, a deeply segregated community, and Chicago itself is quite segregated. And so we've had incredible town gown issues. So suddenly through games, we're bringing young people onto the college campus, showing them that they actually have a place on the college campus. But we use them throughout to break down lots of different barriers. They create a safe environment for exploration. You begin to have role play, other things where suddenly you can fail. Especially for youth in our community, failure has quite a consequence, right? I think everybody's heard all of the reports on Chicago and these very high rates of youth violence. These are kids who don't take a lot of risks because the consequences are high. So games begin to be a place where you can explore these ideas. We watch young people engage for hours. I think we see the negative sides where we say the amount of time that young people spend playing video games. But it is a place where the eyes are, where their interests are, and so why not take us there as well? It's a huge industry, and we use it as a platform for study, and we've talked as well about the ability to scale interventions. So I'm going to tell you about a game we designed called The Infection 4. This was a week-long workshop that we held in the summer of 2012. And the idea was to create a game about STIs. Very few directives when we first began. We worked with four high school students. This is a very different type of workshop for us. A lot of our workshops are focused. We have a curriculum for what they're going to learn. This was, you all are game designers, and you're going to co-design along with us. And we also worked with six university students with backgrounds from everything from computer science to comparative literature. And most of our lab projects are like this. We are existing, we have 12 lab members who come from fields like from the business school and from biology, lots of different fields that come together. And the basics of the workshop was starting to play games, starting to understand how games work, modding games, modifying existing games, research. So they had to do a lot of research on sexual and reproductive health in order to inform the content, and then designing a game. So this is a little bit of what it looks like. This is us sitting in our center with youth, starting to think about what the game would look like, playing other games to sort of think about game mechanics and how they might work, giving feedback, what works, what doesn't work, and then starting by midweek to design our own game. Clearly, we just use a lot of what we call paper, rough prototypes, a lot of paper and pencil, tearing them up, starting again. And then by the end of the week, having a pretty good prototype of what the game would look like. One of the things that we thought about in designing this game was that we wanted a game that wasn't just the medical aspects of sexual and reproductive health, right? You know, you want to talk about gonorrhea and chlamydia and also building self-efficacy, but what about the way that we in our everyday lives experience this, right? So we had two levels, the basic level, and then you go up to the boss level where you kind of have the bigger challenge. And the challenge was dealing with stigma, denial, shame. And so it had two levels, almost like a rock, paper, scissors element, and then kind of this other more communication discussion element, which was the boss level. And then this was a mock-up of the final game. This doom clock, this is how you were supposed to track the rounds as you went around. And so as the team got to the final round, they would keep it kind of marked on there. And where it has that box around it, that's when you knew you had to go to one of the monster levels. And those were our mock-ups of the monsters. Okay. So after this, the game goes into post-production, and we ended up with the game, The Infection 4. These are the cards, where they're event cards where you would explore different things that would happen, risky behavior. At the bottom, those were the characters that you took on. You could be Diana. You could have some factual knowledge. And this is the back of the card. So the final game is a four-player game. It's what's called a collective game, meaning that you work collaboratively. This was a really important part to us, that we wanted young people to sort of see how you had to interact and collaborate and communicate around sexual and reproductive health. And there was an element of role play as well as factual knowledge, and then what I described as fighting the monsters, which are sort of the sexual and reproductive health things like stigma or shame and denial. We do a lot of talking to the young people in the group. We want to hear from them about their lives. What are the things they're dealing with? What do they know? What do they not know? And a lot of the designing is against what we find in those initial sessions. Okay. So the game was evaluated in a school called Quest to Learn. Quest, this is Chicago Quest in New York. It's called Quest to Learn. These are schools that were initially started by a game designer named Katie Salen in conjunction with the MacArthur Foundation. We had a lot of, but we thought this would be a great site because this is a school where games are used as a pedagogical model. So we thought they will be primed much easier. They'd also had a number of pregnancy scares. So they were saying, please come in and bring a sexual and reproductive health curriculum. And so we thought a game-based curriculum would be perfect. There are a number of problems. One is they had very short class time. They've allotted about 25 minutes for this. And there were it was a pretty large class size with quite, to be kind, it was a little chaotic, should we say. And so really it was about 5 minutes settling them down, about 5 minutes checking in, and then really quick time for actual teaching. So We did both a qualitative and quantitative evaluation. We had about 64 young people. They need a lot of help playing the game. They would say when there was somebody there monitoring and helping us, it went really well. When people stepped away, unless there was that one person, you know how in every game there's a person who figures out the rules? Unless that person was there, they had trouble. Now, and this is one of the things that was really nice about video games is you don't need rules, right? They're just kind of intuitive. You play, you fail, you try again. Board games, you have to have rules. So it was a barrier. So they liked it a lot when a teacher was present. They liked it a lot when our team was present. But what we found is that the teachers in the classroom were so uncomfortable with sexual and reproductive health information, we had to physically be present. So there was always this question, was it the curriculum or was it us helping the curriculum along? But they said that the game taught them how to prevent STIs, taught them how to treat STIs, taught them how to feel, how to find resources to treat STIs. But overall, they said they just didn't like it. They didn't like writing, they didn't like playing or learning about the card game. They liked, and one component of the curriculum was that we actually brought doctors and students from the University of Chicago, and they said, we love that. We just wanted frank conversation. So we had people who were sitting in class observing all of the sessions, and they said, you know, we're really surprised by the quantitative evaluation because what we observed was they were really engaged. But they said, you know, you didn't have enough decks. You had such short class time that they're doing things more in groups. The class was really struggling itself just because of inherent class size. But one of the things that they brought out was that young people sort of, as they would pull a card that said chlamydia, they got chlamydia again. So it was really kind of this personalized experience. And then we had been told as we brought it into the classroom, especially for this particular class, is that they wanted that every class had sort of a game-based approach to it, so they have to kind of pose as part of game characters. And they said to us, why do we always have to, you know, take on some kind of role-playing? And we thought, well, we were told to do it that way. But so that was one of their comments is, you know, why do we have to be the superheroes? We want to, you know, we liked it when people just treated us like adults. And this, by the way, was an eighth grade classroom. Okay, so I call this the Phoenix Rising from the Ashes. This is Amanda, one of our game designers. And she took all of this feedback, and we started to redesign. And the reason I talk about this as a failure is that one of the main things to do when you are designing games, designing projects, is to, and you know, you hear it from industry, is to fail early, fail fast, right? So we got it, prototyped, made about three or four decks. We were in classrooms implementing this as part of a larger curriculum, able to get immediate feedback and just said, we've got some inherent problems with this game. So we began to redesign it. We brought youth to the table throughout the process. We did continuous play testing, which is something that we typically do when designing games. But with this game, because we had another big project that interceded, we kind of ended up doing it in two separate iterations. We created cards called Citizens, and I'll show you those, and all the game assets are up here. We created cards that were called Citizens, and so instead of this group coming in and it being kind of unclear who was affected by STIs, we had citizen cards, and they were working collectively with the citizens. The Dooms Clock was very complicated for people, so we created a series of game boards, and you play from one board to the next, and then made very clear instructions, which will also present as a video, so they can sort of see it, and then lots of ambiguity. So this is the new cards. These are our monsters, and these are the citizens, and this is what, and these were sort of the early sketches, and this is what the final game looks like. So while we've done continuous play testing, we've had about 30 young people continue to work with us on this. It will then go get field tested again. Our questions are, have we created a space for frank discussion about sexual and reproductive health? Do they gain terms to discuss sexual and reproductive health? This comes from some of our qualitative research with young men and young women, which just showed the discussions around sexual and reproductive health actually was were, the terminology was not only negative, but had such gender bias. And I don't think it was intentional, but as a result, it actually promoted stigma and discrimination. And so do we begin to change the language that young people use? What do they learn? What do they discuss as they play? And how do same and mixed gendered groups play? While a lot of our games are digital, we're very interested in also creating analog games, because what we're finding is that not all young people do have access at home, in classrooms, to the internet. So the creation of a board game is really important, especially games that we think might need to go into a classroom and also have an adult who's mediating it. So I want to thank the people that I work with, the Game Changer Design Lab, our research team, the Section on Family Planning, and then the evaluation for this is being funded by the Mary Wolford Foundation, but also a lot of this work is funded by the MacArthur Foundation. So thank you.